Case number 12902, David L. Banks, Revocable Trust, seeks a special use exception to place a telecommunications tower and a variance from the height requirement for a telecommunications tower. Sections 115.25, 115.194.2, and 115.210 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is located on the west side of Irons Lane, approximately 588.7 feet north of Holt's Landing Road. The 911 address is 30240 Irons Lane in Dagsboro. The zoning district is AR1. The tax parcel is District 134, Map 7, Parcel 127. Again, the applicant is seeking a special use exception for a telecommunications tower and a 24-foot variance from the 150-foot maximum height requirement for a tower. We have zero correspondence on this case.
Meet me again, sir.
Remember me? Again, for the record, John Tracy from Young Conaway, Stargett & Taylor here on behalf of the applicant, Selco Partnership. To the left, Andy Peterson, who's already sworn in as our RF engineer, but we couldn't keep things consistent, so Jake Minardi is the civil engineer on this project from Network Connects. Sue Manchel is the site acquisition specialist for this. I'm going to ask if it's okay, Mr. Sharp, if I can move into this record the testimony that was offered in the previous hearing so that we don't have to repeat a lot of the basic stuff.
I think because it's a different property, we should make the record.
I'm going to make an individual record, but I just wanted to move that testimony in just so I don't have to repeat some of the more generic statements.
That's up to the board. I know typically we don't do that, but that's up to you all how you wish to handle it. I know a lot of it is site specific. Certainly, Mr. Tracy, you had mentioned before about RF emissions and those things. So,
and I'm going to hit all the specifics for this site so that that's all on the record, but the need for services and how cell phones work and cell towers work, that doesn't change generically. So basically, what I was just trying to do is not have to repeat the generic information so I can just focus on the
we're
site
okay
specific.
With that.
Okay, thanks. And could you expand that picture just a little bit? Because I know there's, yeah, there we go. Okay. So again, we are here seeking both the special use permit as well as the variance that we need for the height. The variance for the height on this one is a little taller, primarily because of the trees that are in the area, particularly to the north. If you continue further up Irons Road, you will end up getting to where the Cripple Creek Golf Course is, and there's a lot of high trees in between us and them, and that is one of the primary dead areas that we are trying to address with this. In addition, there's a different aspect of this application than the one that you just heard, and that this is serving a dual purpose. This is both a covered site, which is your standard traffic on the road. You're trying to cover a dead area. This is also a capacity site in the sense that the area is already being overloaded. This site is being driven as much, if not more so, by the demands placed on the network for data systems, data usage that we all have in our cell phones and our iPads and everything else. So whether you're doing a Zoom meeting on your iPad or you're watching a movie or you're playing games or you're reading on ESPN for the latest betting information on the Super Bowl, all of that is taking capacity from the network through the data side of things. And as Mr. Peterson alluded to in the prior application, and as we're talking about in this application here, when a bunch of people are on their phones at one time, you end up having that coverage footprint shrinking and you have your service degrading. I use the example in front of boards such as these is if you're at a concert or you're at a sporting event where you know they have good coverage there, you know there's facilities all around, but yet you can't get on your phone because 30,000 other people are trying to do the same thing at the same time. So the coverage is there, but the capacity isn't to handle it. So this site is being driven as much by the capacity needs, if not more so, than by the coverage needs. Again, even though this property is zoned AR1, you can see the front and then to the back, these are some form of agricultural slash industrial type buildings that are in the area. You can see across the street, there's some chicken houses and other facilities. I believe there's some small excavation looks to be occurring on the property below us there, and there's a pond immediately to the right. So even though this is AR1, it's a more clustered area than what we were talking about in the last application. Here, Much of the information, as you heard, is the same. In this instance, I don't think there were any structures within two miles that we could co-locate on. So it's not even one where I can point to and say that we're on in one. There's one inside of 2 miles and we're already on it. There are no instances here, as the report noted. This is roughly the same from an emissions standpoint. We are 3.1% of the permitted levels in the FCC. Again, using all of the same upper level assumptions in the FCC guidance. This will be lighted again in accordance with the county requirements. There was no need to do it from an FAA standpoint, but again, that doesn't exempt us from the county requirements to meet that, and we are doing that. It meets all setbacks. It's going to be fenced and screened in accordance with the code. The big difference here is in terms of the height variance. This one's a little bit taller. It's 174 feet to the top of the lightning rod. If you take into account the lightning rod and the warning light at the top of the tower, you're still looking at something that's about 168 feet as opposed to 150 feet. What I'd like to do is have Mr. Peterson come up and talk more specifically about that, because it's a little bit different than the last application, to go into our need for the particular relief from the height aspects in this instance.
And just for the record, we have Andrew Peterson, who's been previously sworn in this evening.
Correct. Thanks. Yeah, so in this case, we do need a little bit more height, and that's mainly to achieve that in that strong in-building coverage to the residences on the west side of the golf club there. There's some homes that dot the shoreline, and then some that are inland, and without that antenna center line of 165 feet, we're not able to see kind of down into those homes and provide that strong in-building coverage because of tree line and the other homes that kind of get in the way. So we needed a little bit more height in this case to achieve that goal of strong in-building coverage for that area.
Andy, if you could expand that picture out and move it maybe a little to the north there. You can see that, I think, Andy talks, is what you were talking about
there. Right, yeah, if we head north from there, there's a density of homes there on the west side of the golf course, and we want to make sure that we're providing strong in-building coverage for them, give them that option of replacing their landlines or voice service, and then eventually the fixed wireless service that I had mentioned earlier would become an option for those folks for their wireless broadband in the home.
Thank you, Andy. And so, yeah, this has obviously been an area where you've had not more development in recent years. Plus, you have a lot of people using the golf course, and there's no real coverage on the golf course as well. And so those, especially if you hit the ball like I do, you can be ending up in some pretty remote spots, and you would want somebody to be able to find you if you had some kind of situation occurring out there. So that's an added benefit of that. I wanted to touch a little bit on the standards for the variance. Again, from the special exception, as I stated to the last meeting, I don't think there's any adverse impact, much less a substantially adverse impact from the facility in general. As you can see, we're in a little bit more of both a developed area, but also a non-residentially developed area in here. These things emit no sounds. They are not lit other than the required warning lights. They don't tax government resources. They don't generate any traffic. So there really is no impact, much less a adverse impact, or as the code requires, a substantially adverse impact. We provided the information regarding impacts on property values or lack thereof from these types of facilities. With regard to the variance, I just wanted to walk through the standards in a little bit more detail. Since I didn't do that in the last hearing. Again, I think it has to be viewed in this instance in terms of the use as opposed to the property, because as we talked about before, we don't have the luxury of just putting it automatically on a particular property. You have to find a willing landlord who wants to accept it, and you have to find it in the area where there's a need for the tower, otherwise it doesn't work. So sometimes you're left dealing with what you can find, and then you have to overcome any adverse impacts on the design that you have to deal with. And here, again, we're meeting all the horizontal setbacks and things like that, so it's the vertical setback that we need. So in this instance, I would argue the variance is really not tied to the property itself, more so the use that is going on the property. And the uniqueness about the cell towers, again, is we just can't put them anywhere. They have to go where there's a need for it, and there has to go where there's an acceptance for it. And there, then, you have to deal with whatever obstacles are in your way, in this case, the substantial trees that are here. And I come back to the fact that the 150-foot requirement in the code is not something that's been tied by specific properties or tied by specific research. It's just a number. And as you saw from the last application, there are plenty of towers that are much taller than the 150. It's simply a matter or a byproduct of how you need to make the service work. So the uniqueness is the ability to find a willing landlord and then have the ability to provide the services that are required to fill the gap. As far as not being created by the applicant, again, it's not the applicant, it's the applicant responding to the demand on the services. In other words, we're not just coming in saying we want to put a 174-foot tower here. We're here because that's what we need in order to bridge the gaps, and it's being driven by the folks around who are using the services, not by the applicant. It's kind of the inverse in that instance. As you heard Mr. Peterson testify, this is the minimum variance that we're seeking in order to be able to achieve the design goals of this facility. As far as altering the essential character, again, the 150-foot tower is permitted as a matter of right, so to speak, if you get the special use exception. So really, altering the essential character is only in this case the 24 feet, because that's what's being asked above and beyond what the code requires. And in this instance, roughly 6 feet of that is warning light and lightning rod. So is that 18 feet going to make a difference when you're looking at a tower that otherwise could be there if it worked at 150 feet? So I don't believe that this would alter that addition of 24 feet would alter the essential character. And as far as cannot otherwise be developed, I mean, in this instance, like most cell tower applications, the property is already being used for something. So in that regards, it's already been developed, whether it's farming, whether it's the uses that are going on here, whether it's commercial uses. These are separate permitted uses that take up very small areas of the property. So the variance in this case is related not to the use being on the property, the size of the horizontal plane. It's simply limited to the height. And as you heard Mr. Peterson testify, if we can't get this height that we're looking for, we're going to be unable to provide the coverage that's needed in this area, particularly, again, to the highly densely populated areas or utilized areas to the north. So with that, in addition to the generic information that we covered previously, I'll just have Mr. Peterson come back up for a second. Andy, to the extent that I was characterizing or discussing any aspects of your RF reports, can you confirm that I was doing so in an accurate fashion?
Yes. The only exception I would make is that the alternate sites, there are two sites, I think, that are within 2 miles, but Verizon's already co-located on both of them.
I thought that was the other one.
I think my note is that that Verizon is not already installed on.
Okay.
So I did find a couple structures, but we're already on them. So other than that, everything else is exactly how I would have testified.
And Mr. Minardi, to the extent that I covered anything from a civil engineering aspect, can you confirm that I did so accurately?
You know what? I haven't been sworn in.
That's right. So you swear.
Can you state your name and address for the record, please?
Jacob Minardi, 22 East Clinton Avenue, Haddon Township, New Jersey.
Swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
And then going back to the question, to the extent that I characterized any aspects of your plans or other civil engineering aspects of this project, can you confirm that I did so accurately?
Yes, they were accurate.
Sure.
Any questions?
What's the property used for now? Did you testify?
It's
about a 2-acre parcel fired.
Yeah, there's in the back piece is related as well. The back piece are old chicken houses. I can ask Ms. Manchel if she has yeah, she'll come. You can swear Ms. Manchel. She's interfaced with
me. We need you to come forward
to the microphone.
State your name and address for the record, please.
Sue Manchell, 104 Christian Street, Philadelphia, PA 19147.
Swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
And the question was about the site itself and what it's used for currently.
Yeah, the back part of the property is for storage, and the front is like a auto body type of maintenance trucking.
It's like a trucking.
Yeah, type of a shop.
In the areas nearby, I know Mr. Tracy had testified or stated about a golf course and some residences. Is that, are there any other businesses or things of that in the area?
Not to my knowledge, other than, you know, the golf course.
Thank you.
There are some, if you expand the picture slightly, you see there's some agriculture, like chicken houses and stuff there across the street.
There's not much ag down there anymore, that's for sure. Any questions from the board?
You had, on your previous presentation, you had two pictures of where before service and after service. I don't see that on here. I don't.
It's on, if you're looking at the radio frequency design analysis, they are on pages 2 and 3, are the existing coverage and the proposed coverage. And then the pages 5 and 6 are the best server footprint maps, which again are something that wasn't in the last one because that one was focusing more on just the coverage on 404 as opposed to this one being both the data as well as that coverage. So we have both sets of plots in there. In addition, Andy has charts showing the statistics that the data demand is anticipated to be increasing threefold from where we are now to about 2028.
Thank you.
So you were saying that there was two other towers that Verizon was on within 2 miles of this tower?
Yeah, I think, I mean, they're both about 2 miles, probably just under 2 miles. Yeah, they're on all of the maps to the south and to the east.
But they don't meet the demand or the need for the service.
Right. Yeah, they're you know, they're beyond that distance where we can provide strong in-building coverage to the dense area. And they're also being exhausted, particularly summer months, by the demand in the area.
And these towers, like you said, you know, 5-10 years from now, where you even have more houses and newer technology, they can be upgraded all along, right?
Yeah, we're continuing. We're always upgrading. Analog service became 2G service and 3G service, and then 4G, and now the 5G service you see the
so not necessarily market. We'll need more towers. We'll just
right. It's not always that we need more towers. Verizon is always participating in the FCC auctions to acquire more airwaves, and then the equipment for those new airwaves is manufactured by the equipment manufacturers, and then Verizon upgrades their towers with those, and that's so. But that's kind of a long pole in the tent type of thing when we have an urgent need to add capacity. Or to add service, to add capacity, really, we will need to add a new site. In this case, we have kind of a service area issue with coverage and a capacity issue, so we need to add a new site here. But doesn't always mean that we just have to build new sites to add capacity. There are other factors in play, like the auctions, and then also the iterative improvements in the equipment. With 5G being more spectrally efficient than 4G, we can exchange more data over the air than we could with earlier generations of technology. But again, that's kind of a slow evolution.
Mr. Peterson, other than the gravel access drive, I just want to confirm that the fence area that we're looking at on this particular project surrounding the tower is 50 by 50.
I'm going to turn that question over to civil engineer, if that's
whomever.
Okay. Yep.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Adding one other note, Mr. Hastings, to the question you were asking, and the two towers that are the closest to this location, they are both short. They're right just over 100 feet, and one of them, just going to what we were talking about earlier, is a co-location on a water tank. So that was not something where we had to build a tower. There was a structure there of height. But there to the, if you look at the map that I was referring Mr. Williamson to, they're kind of in the right-hand corner of the map below this potential site. They're both identified there. They're both about 105 feet. That if their information's on page 2 of the RF design.
One question is, it looks like there's maybe one light that's above the 150 feet. Is that correct?
Excuse me, one light?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It's just, it's like just barely above the 150
yeah.
feet. Okay.
Yeah. It's the, again, every 50 feet. So from 0 to 50, and then we would have to do a fourth if we were getting to 200, but we're not.
Okay.
We're not there,
gotcha.
So we have three lights.
The antennas, it looks like there's different kinds of antennas on this than the last one we heard. Is there any difference there?
Jake or Andy, do you want to respond to that?
Or are they the exact same?
Yeah, they're going to have very similar panel style antennas installed on both. The bill of design that Verizon's using at the moment is three per sector. There's three sectors, so a total of 9 antennas. They're arranged on a triangular platform, and they point in 3 distinct directions. There may be some tweaks with exactly what directions they point, and then once the facility is constructed during the integration process, they may decide to kind of tweak them a little bit more this way or that way. And then as, you know, with anything that's quickly evolving, the antenna manufacturers have newer and better antennas that are always coming out, so there may be some last minute changes, but that size of antenna, that the approximate dimensions will be true to the plan.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Anything else? Mr. Sharp, you? Is anyone present who would like to speak in favor of this case? Would you like to come forward and be sworn in, sir? Good evening. Mr. Sharp will swear you in.
Good evening. Can you state your name and address for the record, please?
My name is Lincoln Davis. I reside at 29873 Sawmill Drive in Dagsboro, which is about a half mile north of this site.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
I've resided in the Bay Colony subdivision for more than 20 years now, and our cell phone service has been awful the entire time, both on AT&T and Verizon. Typically, we have 1 to 2 bars worth of signal strength on our phones. It gets a little better in the wintertime as the leaves drop from the trees, but we need this service, and I support the application.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this case? Is there anyone who would like to speak in opposition to this case? Anything else from the board? At this time, I'll close the public hearing for case 12902 for Mr. David L. Banks, Revocable Trust, and entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 12902 for David L. Banks Revocable Trust for the special use exception and the requested variances, pending a final written decision based upon the record made during the public hearing and for the following reasons. The property has unique physical conditions due to its location. Due to such physical circumstances or conditions, there's no possibility the property can be developed in strict conformity, and the variance is necessary to enable reasonable use of the property. The difficulty has not been created by the applicant. The variance will not alter the essential character of the neighborhood. The variance represents the minimum necessary to afford relief, and it will not get the special use exception. The right standard here will not affect substantially adversely the use of neighboring and adjacent properties.
Second. Motion and a second. Mr. Williamson?
Aye.
Mr. Hastings?
Aye.
Dr. Carson?
Aye, for the reasons stated.
Mr. Warfel?
Aye, for my reasons.
And I too. So they vote of 5-0, your case is approved.